but Derstim is so potent that none of the customary antidotes have any effect. Magical objects are the only possible cure.
And what did you use to cure the king's brother and nephews? Sophronia asked.
It was an uncut gem of a peculiar color. I think it originally came from Deresia, though I can't really be sure. It's my belief that the Temur gods infused it with their power.
And where is that gem now? Sparhawk asked intently.
Gone, I'm afraid. I had to ground it to a powder and mix it with wine to cure the king's relatives.
You idiot! Sophronia exploded. That is not the way to use such an object. You need only touch it to the patient's body and call forth its power.
I'm a trained physician, madam, he replied stiffly. I cannot turn insects into fairies, nor levitate myself, nor cast spells upon my enemies. I can only follow the normal practices of my profession, and that means that the patient must ingest the medication.
You destroyed a stone that might have healed thousands for the sake of just a few.
With some effort, she controlled her anger.
Do you know of any other such objects? She asked him.
A few, he shrugged. There's a great spear in the Imperial Palace in Temul. Several rings in Zemok, though I doubt that they'd be much good in healing people. It's rumored that there's a jeweled bracelet in Pelosia somewhere, but that might be only a myth. The sword of the king of the island of Mithrium was reputed to have great power, but Mithrium sank into the sea eons ago. I've also heard that the Styrix have quite a few magic wands.
That's also a myth, she told him. Wood is too fragile for that kind of power. Any others?
The only one I know of is the jewel on the royal crown of Talicia, but that's been lost since the time of the Zemok invasion, he frowned. I don't think this will help very much, he added. But Erisham has a talisman that he claims is the most holy and powerful thing in all the world. I've never seen it myself, so I can't say for sure. And Erisham's wits aren't so firmly set in his head that he'd be any kind of an authority. You'd never be able to get it away from him in any case.
Sophronia reattached her veil across the lower part of her face.
Thank you for your candor, Dr. Tangen, she said. Be assured that no one will learn of your secret from us.
She thought a moment.
I think you should splint this, she said, holding out her arm. That should prove to the curious that we had a legitimate reason for this visit, and it should protect you as well as us.
That's a very good idea, madam.
Tangen fetched a couple of slats and a long strip of white cloth. Would you take a bit of friendly advice, Tangen? Sparhawk asked him as he began to splint Zephrenia's arm.
I'll listen.
Do that. If it were me, I'd gather up a few things and go to Zand. The king can protect you there. Get out of Debaur while you still can. Fanatics make the jump from suspicion to certainty very easily, and it won't do you much good if you're proved innocent after you've been burned at the stake.
But everything I own is here.
I'm sure that'll be a great comfort to you when your toes are on fire.
Do you really think I'm in that much danger?
Tangen asked in a weak voice, looking up from his task. Sparhawk nodded. That much and more. I'd estimate that you'll be lucky to live out the week if you stay here in Debaur. The doctor began to tremble violently as Sophronia slipped her splinted arm back into the sling.
Wait a minute,
he said as they started towards the door.
What about that?
He pointed at the fairy swooping through the air near the window.
Oh, Sophronia said. Sorry, I almost forgot about her.
She mumbled a few words and made a vague gesture. The bumblebee went back to batting its head against the window. It was dark when they emerged from the apothecary's shop into the nearly deserted square. It's not very much, Sparhawk said dubiously.
It's more than we had before. At least we know how to cure Ilana. All we need to do now is to find one of these objects.
Would you be able to tell if Erisham's talisman has any real power?
I think so,
Good. Perrain says that Arisham preaches every night. Let's go and find him. I'll listen to a dozen sermons if it puts me close to a cure.
How do you propose to get away from him?
I'll think of something. A black-robed man suddenly blocked their path.
Stop right there, he commanded.
What's your problem, neighbor? Sparhawk asked him.
Why are you not at the feet of Holy Arisham?
The robed man asked, accusingly. We were just on our way, Sparhawk replied.
All Debauer knows that Holy Arisham speaks to multitudes at sundown. Why are you so deliberately absenting yourselves?
We arrived only today, Sparhawk explained, and I had to seek medical attention for my sister's injured arm. The fanatic scowled suspiciously at Sophronia's sling.
Surely you did not consult with the wizard Tangen, he said in an outraged tone.
When one is in pain, one does not ask to see the healer's credentials, Sophronia told him. I can assure you, however, that the doctor used no witchcraft. He set the broken bone and splinted it for me in the same way any other physician would have.
The righteous do not consort with wizards, the zealot declared stubbornly.
I'll tell you what, neighbor, Sparhawk said pleasantly. Why don't I break your arm? Then you can visit the doctor yourself. If you watch him very closely, you should be able to tell if he's using witchcraft or not. The fanatic stepped back apprehensively. Come now, friend, Sparhawk told him enthusiastically. Be brave. It won't hurt all that much, and think of how much Holy Arisham will appreciate your zeal in rooting out the abomination of witchcraft.
Could you tell us where we might find the place where Holy Arisham speaks to the multitudes? Sophronia interposed. Our souls hunger and thirst for his words.
Over that way, the nervous man said, pointing. You can see the light from the torches.
Thanks, friend, Sparhawk said, bowing slightly. He frowned. How is it that you yourself are not at the services this evening?
I have a sterner duty, the fellow declared. I must seek out those who are absent without cause and deliver them up for judgment.
Ah, Sparhawk said. I see. He turned away, then turned back. Are you sure you wouldn't like to have me break your arm for you? It won't take but a minute. The fanatic hurried away from them.
Must you threaten everyone you meet, Sparhawk?
Sophronia asked. He irritated me.
You irritate very easily, don't you?
He considered it. Yes, he admitted. I suppose I do. Shall we go? They went through the dark streets of Debauer until they reached the tents pitched on the outskirts. Some distance towards the south, a ruddy glow pulsed up towards the glittering stars. They moved quietly past the tents towards the light. The flickering torches were set on tall poles surrounding a kind of natural amphitheater on the southern edge of town, a sort of depression between two hills. The hollow was filled with Arisham's followers, and the deranged holy man himself stood atop a large boulder halfway up the side of one of the hills. He was tall and gaunt, with a long gray beard and bushy black eyebrows. His voice was strident as he harangued his followers, but his words were difficult to understand because of his lack of teeth. When Sparhawk and Sophronia joined the crowd, the old man was in the middle of an extended and highly involuted proof of God's special favor, which had, he declared, been bestowed upon him in a dream. There were huge logical gaps in his argument and great leaps of what passed for faith here in Rendor.
Is he making any sense at all?
Sophronia whispered to Sparhawk in a puzzled tone as she removed the splints and the sling. None that I can detect, he whispered back.
I didn't think so. Does the Aline god actually encourage that sort of hysterical gibberish?
He never has to me.
Can we get any closer?
I don't think so. The crowd's pretty thick in front of where he's standing. Arisham then turned to one of his favorite topics, a denunciation of the church. The organized Aline religion, he maintained, was cursed by God for its failure to recognize his exalted status as the chosen and beloved spokesman of the Most High.
But the wicked shall be punished,
he lisped in a toothless shriek with spittle flying from his lips.
My followers are invincible! Be patient for but a little more time, and I will raise my holy talisman and lead you into war against them. They will send their accursed church knights to do war upon us, but fear them not. The power of this holy relic will sweep them before us like chaff before the wind.
He held something high over his head in his tightly clenched fist.
The spirit of the blessed Ishand himself has confirmed this to me.
Well, Sparhawk whispered to Sophronia.
He's too far away, she murmured. I can't feel anything one way or the other. We're going to have to get closer. I can't even tell what he's holding.
Arisham's voice sank into a harshly conspiratorial tone.
I tell you this, O ye faithful, and my words are true. The voice of God has revealed to me that even now our movement is spreading through the fields and forests of the kingdoms of the north. The ordinary people there, our brothers and sisters, grow weary of the yoke of the church, and they will join our holy cause.
It was Martell who told him that, Sparhawk muttered, and if he thinks that Martell is the voice of God, then he's even crazier than I thought. He rose up on tiptoe and looked over the heads of the crowd. A large pavilion stood some distance down the hill from where Arisham was preaching. It was surrounded by a palisade of stout poles.
Let's work our way around this crowd, he suggested. I think I've located the old man's tent.
Slowly, they moved back until they were at the edge of the crowd. Arisham continued his rambling harangue, but his slurred words were lost in the distance and the murmuring of his followers. Sparhawk and Sophronia slipped around the crowd towards the palisade and the dark pavilion inside it. When they were perhaps 20 paces away, Sparhawk touched Sophronia's arm, and they stopped. A number of armed men stood before the opening at the front of the palisade.
We'll have to wait until he finishes preaching, Sparhawk murmured.
Would you like to tell me what you have in mind? She said. I hate surprises.
I'm going to see if I can get us into his tent. If that talisman of his really has any power, it might be difficult to get it away from him in the middle of this crowd.
How do you propose to manage that, Sparhawk?
I thought I'd try flattery.
Isn't that a bit dangerous and very obvious?
Of course it's obvious, but you have to be obvious when you're dealing with deranged people. They don't have the concentration to grasp subtlety. Arisham's voice was rising to a shrill climax, and his followers cheered at the end of each of his mumbled pronouncements. Then he delivered his benediction, and the crowd began to break up. Surrounded by a knot of jealous disciples, the holy man began to walk slowly through the milling throng toward his tent. Sparhawk and Sophronia moved to place themselves in his path.
"Stand aside," one of the disciples commanded harshly.
"Forgive me, exalted disciple," Sparhawk said loudly enough for his words to carry to the tottering old man.
"But I bear a message from the King of Dara for Holy Arisham. His Majesty sends greetings to the true head of the Aline Church." Sophronia made a slightly strangled noise.
"Holy Arisham takes no note of kings," the disciple sneered arrogantly. "Now stand aside."
"A moment there, Rakad,"
Arisham mumbled in a surprisingly weak voice.
"We would hear more of this message from our brother of Dara. It may well be that this is the communication mentioned by God when last he spoke with us."
"Most holy Arisham," Sparhawk said with a deep bow, "His Majesty, King Obler of Dara, greets you as his brother. Our king is very old, and age always brings wisdom."
"Truly,"
Arisham agreed, stroking his own long gray beard. "His Majesty has long contemplated the teachings of the Blessed Ishand," Sparhawk continued, "and he has also eagerly followed your own career here in Rendor. He has regarded the activities of the church with increasing disfavor. He has found churchmen to be hypocritical and self-serving."
"My very words," Arisham said ecstatically. "I have said so myself 100 times and more."
His Majesty acknowledges that you are the source and wellspring of his thought, Holy Arisham.
Well,
Arisham replied, preening himself slightly. His Majesty believes that the time has come for a purification of the Aline Church, and he further believes that you are the one who has been chosen by God to purge the Church of her sins.
Did you hear my sermon tonight?
The old man asked, eagerly.
I preached to that self-same topic.
Truly, Sparhawk said, I was amazed at how closely your words coincided with those of His Majesty when he charged me with his message to you. Know, however, Holy Arisham, that His Majesty intends to provide more aid to you than the mere comfort of his greetings and his respectful affection. The details of his further intentions, though, must be for your ears alone. He looked around suspiciously at the crowd, pressing in upon them. In a gathering so large as this, there may be several who are not what they seem. And if what I have to tell you should reach Krellos, the Church would bend all her efforts to hinder His Majesty's design. Arisham tried without much success to look shrewd.
Your prudence becomes you, young man, he agreed. Let us go into my pavilion, so that you may fully disclose the mind of my dear brother Obler to me.
Pushing aside the officious disciples, Sparhawk thrust his way through their ranks to offer the support of his arm and shoulder to the elderly zealot. Holy one, he said in a fawning tone, fear not to lean upon me, for as the blessed Ashand has commanded, it is the duty of the young and strong to serve the aged and wise.
How truly you speak, my son.
They passed thus through the gate of the palisade and across a stretch of sand dotted with sheep droppings. The interior of Arisham's pavilion was far more luxurious than might have been expected from its severe exterior. A single lamp burned expensive oil in the center, and priceless carpets covered the rude sand floor. Silken fabric curtained off the rear portions of the pavilion, and from behind those curtains came the giggling of adolescent boys.
Please, sit and take your ease,
Arisham invited expansively, sinking down upon a cluster of silken cushions.
Let us take some refreshment, and then you may tell me of the intent of my dear brother Obler of Dara.
He clapped his hands sharply together, and a doe-eyed boy emerged from behind one of the silken panels.
Bring us some of the fresh melon, Sabaud,
Arisham told him.
As you command, most holy.
The boy bowed and retired behind the silken screen. Arisham leaned back on his cushions.
I am not at all surprised at the communication you have brought me concerning the growing sentiment for our cause in Dara,
he lisped to Sparhawk.
Word hath reached me that such feelings are not uncommon in the kingdoms of the north. Indeed, another such message has but recently arrived.
He paused thoughtfully.
It occurs to me, perhaps at the prompting of God himself, whoever joins his thought with mine, that you and the other messenger may know each other.
He turned towards a silken panel that concealed a dimly lighted part of the tent.
Come forth, my friend and adviser. Look upon the face of our noble visitor from Dara and tell me if you know him.
A shadow moved behind the panel. It seemed to hesitate for a moment, and then a robed and hooded figure emerged into the lamplight. The hooded man was only slightly shorter than Sparhawk, and he had the heavy shoulders of a warrior. He reached up and pushed back his hood to reveal his piercing black eyes and his thick mane of snowy white hair. In a kind of curious detachment, Sparhawk wondered what it was exactly that kept him from instantly drawing his sword.
Indeed, most holy Arisham, Martell said in his deep, resonant voice. Sparhawk and I have known each other for a very long time.
Chapter 23
It's been a long time, hasn't it, Sparhawk? Martell said in a neutral tone. His eyes, however, were watchful.
With some effort, Sparhawk relaxed his tightly clenched muscles.
Yes, it has,
he replied. It must be 10 years now at least. We should try to get together more often.
We'll have to make a point of that.
It hung there. The two continued to look directly into each other's face. The air seemed to crackle with tension as each waited for the other to make the first move.
Sparok, Arisham mused. A most unusual name. It seems to me that I've heard it somewhere before.
It's a very old name, Sparok told him. It's been passed down through my family for generations. Some of my ancestors were men of note.
Perhaps that's where I heard it then,
Arisham mumbled complacently.
I'm delighted to have been able to reunite two old and dear friends.
We are forever in your debt, most holy, Martell replied. You cannot imagine how I've hungered for the sight of Sparhawk's face. No more than I hungered for the sight of yours, Sparhawk said. He turned to the ancient lunatic. At one time, Martell and I were almost as close as brothers, most holy. It's a shame that the years have kept us apart. I've tried to find you, Sparhawk, Martell said coolly. Several times. Yes, I heard about that. I always hurried back to the place where you'd been seen, but by the time I got there, you'd already left. Pressing business, Martell murmured.
It is ever thus,
Arisham lisped sententiously, his ruined mouth collapsing over the words.
The friends of our youth slip away from us, and we are left alone in our old age.
His eyes drooped shut in melancholy reverie. He did not reopen them. After a moment, he began to snore. He tires easily, Martell said quietly. He turned to Sophronia, although still keeping a wary eye on Sparhawk.
Little mother,
he greeted her in a tone between irony and regret.
Martell.
She inclined her head in the briefest of nods.
Ah, he said, it seems that I've disappointed you.
Not so much as you've disappointed yourself, I think.
Punishment, Sophronia? He asked sardonically. Don't you think I've been punished enough already?
It's not in my nature to punish people, Martell. Nature gives neither rewards nor punishment, only consequences.
All right, then. I accept the consequences. Will you at least permit me to greet you and to seek your blessing?
He took her wrists and turned her palms up.
No, Martell, she replied, closing her hands. I don't think so. You're no longer my pupil. You found another to follow.
That wasn't entirely my idea, Sophronia. You rejected me, you remember.
He sighed and released her wrists. Then he looked back at Sparhawk.
I'm really rather surprised to see you, brother mine, he said, considering all the times I've sent Addis to deal with you. I'll have to speak sharply with him about that, provided you haven't killed him, of course.
He was bleeding a little the last time I saw him, Sparhawk said, but not very seriously.
Addis doesn't pay much attention to blood, not even his own.
Would you like to step out of the way, Sophronia? Sparhawk said, opening the front of his robe and shifting his sword hilt around slightly. Martell and I were having a little discussion the last time we saw each other. I think it's time we continued it. Martell's eyes narrowed, and he opened his own robe. Like Sparhawk, he also wore mail and a broadsword.
Excellent notion, Sparhawk, he said, his deep voice dropping to little more than a whisper.
Sophronia stepped between them.
Stop that, both of you, she commanded. This isn't the time or the place. We're right in the middle of an army. If you play this game here in Arisham's tent, you'll have half of Rendor in here with you before it's over.
Sparhawk felt a hot surge of disappointment, but he knew that she was right. Regretfully, he took his hand away from his sword hilt.
Sometime soon, however, Martell, he said in a dreadfully quiet voice. I'll be happy to oblige you, dear brother, Martell replied with an ironic bow.
His eyes narrowed speculatively. "What are you two doing here in Rendor?" he asked. "I thought you were still in Camoria." "It's a business trip." "Ah, you found out about the Daristim, I see. I hate to tell you this, but you're wasting your time. There's no antidote. I checked that very carefully before I recommended it to a certain friend in Samura." "You're pressing your luck, Martell," Sparhawk told him ominously. "I always have, brother mine. As they say, no risk, no profit. Elana will die, I'm afraid. Lycius will succeed her, and Annius will become archprelate. I expect to reap quite a handsome profit from that."
"Is that all you ever think about?"
"What else is there?" Martell shrugged. "Everything else is only an illusion. How's Vanyan been lately?"
"He's well," Sparhawk replied. "I'll tell him you asked."
"That's assuming that you live long enough to see him again. Your situation here is precarious, my old friend."
"So's yours, Martell."
"I know, but I'm used to it. You're weighted down with scruples and the like. I left all that behind a long time ago."
"Where's your tame Demorc, Martell?"
Sophronia asked suddenly. He looked only slightly surprised, and he recovered instantly.
"I really haven't the slightest idea, little mother," he replied. "It comes to me without being summoned, so I never know when it's going to turn up. Perhaps it returned to the place it came from. It has to do that every so often, you know."
"I've never been that curious about the creatures of the underworld."
"That could be a serious oversight."
"Perhaps."
Arisham stirred on his cushions and opened his eyes.
"Did I doze off?"
he asked.
"Only briefly, most holy," Martell said. "It gave Sparhawk and me time to renew our friendship. We had much to discuss."
"Very much," Sparhawk agreed. He hesitated slightly, but then decided that Martell was so sure of himself that he'd probably miss the significance of the question.
"You mentioned a talisman during your sermon, Holy One," he said to Arisham. "Might we be permitted to see it?"
"The holy relic, of course."
The old man fumbled inside his robe and drew out something that appeared to be a twisted lump of bone. He held it out proudly.
"Do you know what this is, Sparhawk?" he asked.
"No, most holy, I'm afraid not."
"The blessed Ishan began life as a shepherd, you know."
"Yes, I'd heard so."
"One day when he was quite young, a ewe in his flock gave birth to a pure white lamb that was like none other he had ever seen. Unlike all other sheep of that breed, this infant ram bore horns upon its head. It was, of course, a sign from God. The pure lamb, obviously, symbolized the blessed Ishand himself, and the fact that the lamb was horned could only mean one thing, that the Shand had been chosen to chastise the church for her inequity."
"How mysterious are the ways of God," Sparhawk marveled.
"Truly, my son, truly. Ishand cared for the ram most tenderly, and in time it began to speak to him, and its voice was the voice of God himself. And thus God instructed the Shand in that which he must do. This holy relic is a piece of the horn of that very ram. Now you can see why it has such enormous power."
"Clearly, most holy," Sparhawk said in a reverent tone of voice. "Come closer, little sister," he said to Sophronia. "View this miraculous relic." She stepped forward and looked intently at the twisted bit of horn in Arisham's hand.
"Remarkable," she murmured.
She glanced at Sparhawk, shaking her head almost imperceptibly. The bitter taste of disappointment filled his mouth.
"The power of this talisman will overcome all the concerted might of the accursed church knights and their foul witchcraft," Arisham declared. "God himself has told me so."
He smiled almost shyly.
"I have discovered a truly remarkable thing,"
he told them confidentially.
"When I am alone, I can lift the holy relic to my ear and hear the voice of God. Thus he instructs me, even as he instructed the blessed Ishand.
A miracle, Martell said in mock amazement.
Is it not?
Arisham beamed. We are quite overcome with gratitude that you have consented to let us view the talisman, most holy, Sparhawk said. And we will spread word of it throughout the kingdoms of the north, won't we, Martell?
Oh, of course, of course.
Martell's face was slightly puzzled, and he was looking suspiciously at Sparhawk. I perceive now that our coming here is part of God's design, Sparhawk continued. It is our mission to tell all the kingdoms of the north of this miracle, through every village and at every crossroads. Even now I feel the Spirit of God infusing my tongue with eloquence, so that I might better describe what I have seen. He reached out and clapped Martell on the left shoulder, quite firmly. Don't you feel it as well, dear brother? He asked enthusiastically. Martell winced slightly, and Sparhawk could feel the shoulder shrinking from under his hand.
Why, yes, Martell admitted in a slightly pained voice. As a matter of fact, I believe I do.
Wondrous is the might of God,
Arisham exulted.
Yes, Martell said, rubbing at his shoulder. Wondrous.
The idea had been slow in coming, in part perhaps because of the surprise of once again seeing Martell, but now it all began to fall into place. Sparhawk was suddenly glad that Martell was here. And now, most holy, he said, let me give you the remainder of His Majesty's message to you.
Of course, my ears are open to you.
His Majesty commands me to implore you to give him time to marshal his forces before you move against the venal church here in Rendor. He must move with caution in his mobilization, because the aristocracy in Krellos has spies everywhere. He wishes devoutly to aid you, but the church is powerful, and he must mass sufficient force to overcome her might in Dera at one stroke, lest she recover and crush him. It is his thought that, should you mount your campaign here in the south, at the same time he mounts his in the north, the church will be confounded, not knowing which way to turn. And by moving swiftly, you both may take advantage of her confusion and win victory after victory. The impact of these victories will dishearten and demoralize the forces of the church, and you may both march triumphant upon Krellos.
Praise God!
Arisham exclaimed, starting to his feet and brandishing his sheep's horn like a weapon. Sparhawk raised one hand. But, he cautioned, this grand design, which can only have come from God himself, has no chance of success unless you and His Majesty attack simultaneously.
I can see that, of course. God's own voice has instructed me in just such strategy.
I was sure that he had. Sparhawk let his face assume an expression of extreme cunning. Now, he went on, the church is as sly as a serpent, and she has ears everywhere. Despite our best efforts to maintain secrecy, she may uncover our plan. Her first recourse has always been deceit.
I have seen that in her, Arisham admitted.
It may well be that once she has uncovered our plan, she will attempt deception, and what better way to deceive you than to send false messengers to you to declare that His Majesty is in readiness when indeed he is not. Thus the church could defeat you and your disciples one by one. Arisham frowned.
That's true, isn't it?
He said.
But how may we avoid being deceived?
Sparhawk pretended to think about it. Then he suddenly snapped his fingers.
I have it,
he exclaimed. What better way to confound the deceitfulness of the church than by the word? A word known only to you and to me, and to King Obler of Dera. Thus may you know that a message is genuine. Should any come to you with a message that the time has come, but who cannot repeat the word to you, that man will be most surely a servant of the church sent to deceive you, and you should deal with him accordingly. Arisham thought about it.
Why, yes,
he mumbled finally.
I believe that might indeed confound the church. But what word can be so locked in our hearts that none may seek it out?
Sparhawk threw a covert glance at Martell, whose face was suddenly filled with chagrin. It must be a word of power, he said, squinting at the roof of the tent as if deep in thought. The whole ploy was obvious, even childish, but it was the kind of thing that would appeal to the senile old Arisham, and it provided a marvelous opportunity to settle a few scores with Martell, just for old time's sake. Sophronia sighed and lifted her eyes in resignation. Sparhawk felt a little ashamed of himself at that point. He looked at Arisham, who was leaning forward in anticipation, chewing upon emptiness with his toothless mouth, and setting his long beard to waggling. "I will, of course, accept your pledge of secrecy without question, most holy," Sparhawk said in feigned humility. "I, however, swear by my life that the word I am about to give you in profoundest secrecy shall never again pass my lips until I divulge it to King Obler in Aesi, the capital of his kingdom."
"And I also pledge my oath to you, noble friend Sparhawk," the old man cried in an excess of enthusiasm. "Torture will not drag the word from my lips."
He made some attempt to draw himself up regally. "Your pledge honors me, most holy," Sparhawk replied with a deep, rendorous bow. He approached the old man, bent, and whispered, "Ramshorn." Arisham, he noted, didn't smell very good.
"The perfect word,"
Arisham cried. He seized Sparhawk's head in a pair of wiry arms and kissed him soundly, full on the mouth. Martell, his face pale with anger, had tried to draw near enough to hear, but Sophronia stepped in front of him. His eyes flashed angrily, and with obvious effort he restrained his first impulse to thrust her out of his way. She raised her chin and looked him full in the face.
"Well," she said.
He muttered something, turned, and stalked to the far side of the tent, where he stood gnawing at a knuckle in frustration. Arisham still clung to Sparhawk's neck.
"My beloved son and deliverer,"
he cried with his rheumy eyes filled with tears.
"Surely you have been sent to me by God himself. We cannot fail now. God is on our side. Let the wicked tremble before us."
"Truly," Sparhawk agreed, gently disengaging the old man's arms from about his neck. "A thought, holy one," Martell said shrewdly, though his face was still white with fury. "Sparhawk is only human, and therefore mortal. The world is full of mischance. Might it not be wiser to..." "Mischance?" Sparhawk cut him off quickly. "Where is your faith, Martell? This is God's design, not mine. God will not permit me to die until I have performed this service for him. Have faith, dear brother. God will sustain and keep me against all perils. It is my destiny to fulfill this task, and God will see to it that I do not fail."
"Praise God!"
Arisham exclaimed ecstatically, ending the discussion. The doe-eyed boy brought in the melons at that point, and the conversation shifted to more general matters. Arisham delivered another rambling diatribe against the church, while Martell sat scowling at Sparhawk. Sparhawk kept his eyes on his melon, which was surprisingly good. It had all been too easy, somehow, and that worried him just a little. Martell was too clever, too devious, to have been so easily circumvented. He looked appraisingly across the tent at the white-haired man he had hated for so long. Martell's expression was baffled, frustrated, and that was also not like him. The Martell he had known as a youth would never have revealed such emotions. Sparhawk began to feel a little less sure of himself. "A thought has just occurred to me, most holy," he said. "Time is crucial in this affair, and it is essential that my sister and I return to Dara at once to advise His Majesty that all here in Rendor is ready,
and to convey to his ears alone that word which is locked in both our hearts. We have good horses, of course, but a fast boat could take us down river and deliver us to the seaport at Jirak days earlier. Perhaps you, or one of your disciples, might know of some dependable boat owner here in Debauer whom I could hire. Arisham blinked at him vaguely. A boat, he mumbled. A faint movement caught Sparhawk's eye, and he saw Sophronia move her arm, as if only shaking back her sleeve. Instantly, he knew what she had been doing all along.
Hire, my son?
Arisham beamed at him.
Let there be no talk of hiring. I have a splendid boat at my disposal. You will take it, and with my blessing. I will send armed men with you and a regiment, no, a legion, to patrol the banks of the river to make sure you reach Jirak safely.
It shall be as you command, most holy, Sparhawk said. He looked across the tent at Martell with a beatific smile. Is it not amazing, dear brother? He said. Truly such wisdom and generosity can only come from God. Yes, Martell replied darkly. I'm sure of it. I must make haste, holy Arisham. Sparhawk rushed on, rising to his feet. We left our horses and belongings in the care of a servant in a house on the outskirts of town. My sister and I will retrieve them at once and return within the hour.
As you see fit, my son,
Arisham said eagerly.
And I will instruct my disciples to have the boat and the soldiers made ready for your journey down river.
Let me show you the way out of the compound, dear brother, Martell said from between clenched teeth.
Gladly, dear brother, Sparhawk said. Your company, as always, fills my heart with joy.
Return directly, Martell,
Arisham instructed.
We must discuss this wondrous turn of fortune and offer thanks to God for his grace in providing it.
Yes, most holy, Martell said, bowing. I shall come back immediately.
Within the hour, Sparhawk,
Arisham said. Within the hour, most holy, Sparhawk agreed with a deep bow. Come along then, Martell, he said, once again smacking his hand down on the renegade's shoulder.
Of course.
Martell winced, once again shrinking from Sparhawk's comradely blow. Once they were outside the pavilion, Martell turned on Sparhawk, his face white with fury.
Just what do you think you're doing? He demanded.
Testy today, aren't we, old boy? Sparhawk said mildly.
What are you up to, Sparhawk?
Martell snarled, looking around to be sure that no one in the crowd of hovering disciples could hear him. I've just spiked your wheel, Martell, Sparhawk replied. Arisham will sit here until he petrifies unless someone brings him that secret word. I can almost guarantee you that the church knights will be in Krellos when the time comes to elect the new archprelate, because there won't be anything going on in Rendor to drag them away.
Very clever, Sparhawk.
I'm glad you liked it.
This is one more debt you owe me,
Martell grated. Feel free to call them in at any time, dear brother, Sparhawk said. I'll be more than happy to accommodate you. He took Sophronia by the elbow and led her away.
Are you completely out of your senses, Sparhawk?
She demanded, once they were out of earshot of the fuming Martell. I don't think so, he replied. Of course, crazy people never really know, do they?
What were you doing in there? Do you realize how many times I had to step in to keep you out of trouble?
I noticed that. I couldn't have pulled it off without you.
Will you stop smirking and tell me what was behind all that?
Martell was getting too close to our real reason for being here, he explained. I had to throw something else in his path to keep him from realizing that we'd unearthed a possible antidote for the poison. It all worked out rather well, even if I do say so myself.
If you knew you were going to do that before you went into the tent, why didn't you tell me?
How could I have known, Sophronia? I didn't even know Martell was there until I saw him.
You mean?
Her eyes went suddenly very wide. He nodded. I sort of made it up as I went along, he confessed.
Oh, Sparhawk, she said disgusted. You know better than that. He shrugged.
It was about the best I could do at short notice.
Why did you keep hitting Martell on the shoulder like that?
He broke that shoulder when he was about 15. It's always been very sensitive.
That was cruel, she accused.
So was what happened in that alley back in Cypria 10 years ago. Let's go get Kyrick and Flute. I think we've done about all we can here in Devour. Arisham's boat was more like a barge than the scow which had carried them upriver, and it was perhaps 4 times as large. Banks of oarsmen lined each side, and black-robed zealots with swords and javelins clustered in the torchlit bow and stern. Martell had preceded them to the rickety dock, and he stood alone there, some distance from the hot-eyed disciples on shore, as Sparhawk, Zephrenia, Kyrick, and Flute embarked. The renegade's white hair gleamed in the starlight, and his face was very nearly as pale. "You're not going to get away with this, Sparhawk," he said in a low voice. "Oh?" Sparhawk said. "I think you'd better look again, Martell. It seems to me that I already have. You can try to follow me, of course, but all those troops patrolling the riverbanks are probably going to get in your way. Besides, I think that once you get over your peak, you'll realize that about the only thing you can do is stay here and try to wheedle that magic word out of Arisham. Everything you've set up here in Rendor will be at a standstill until you do." "You'll pay for this, Sparhawk," Martell promised darkly. "I thought I already had, old boy," Sparhawk replied. "In Cypria, I believe it was." He reached out, and Martell jerked his shoulder out of range. Instead, however, Sparhawk patted him on the cheek insultingly. "Take care of yourself, Martell," he said. "I want to see you again. Soon. And I want you to be well and in full possession of your faculties. Believe me, you're going to need them." Then he turned and went up the gangway to the waiting barge. The sailors cast off all lines and pushed the barge out into the slowly moving current. Then they ran out their oars and began to row slowly downriver. The dock behind them and the solitary man standing on the end of it shrank out of sight. "Oh, God," Sparhawk cried exultantly. "I love that." The run down river took them a day and a half, and they disembarked a league or so upstream from Jirok to avoid any watchers Martell might have managed to get to the docks ahead of them. The precaution was probably unnecessary, Sparhawk admitted, but there was no point in taking chances. They entered the city through the west gate and mingled with the crowds as they made their way to Vorin's house again. It was late afternoon when they entered. Vorin was a trifle surprised at their reappearance.
"That was quick," he said as they entered his garden.
"We were lucky," Sparhawk shrugged.
"More than lucky," Sophronia said darkly.
The small woman's temper had not noticeably improved since they had left Devour, and she still refused even to talk to Sparhawk.
"Did something go wrong?" Vorin asked mildly.
"Not that I noticed," Sparhawk replied blithely.
"Stop congratulating yourself, Sparhawk," she snapped. "I'm vexed with you, very vexed."
"I'm sorry about that, Sophronia, but I did the best I could." He turned to Vorin. "We ran into Martell," he explained, "and I managed to stop him in his tracks. His whole scheme just collapsed around his ears." Vorin whistled.
"I don't see anything wrong with that, Sophronia."
"It's not what he did, Vorin. It was the way he did it."
"Oh?
I don't want to talk about it."
She gathered Flute up in her arms, went to the bench by the fountain, and sat muttering darkly to the little girl in Styric. "We need a way to get aboard a fast ship bound for Vardenice without being seen," Sparhawk told Vorin. "Can you come up with something?"
"Quite easily," Vorin replied. "Every so often the true identity of one of our brothers is exposed. We've devised a way to get them out of Rendor safely."
He smiled ironically.
"It was the first thing I did when I got to Jirok, actually. I was fairly sure I was going to need it for myself almost immediately. I have a wharf down in the harbor. There's a waterfront inn not far away. It's run by one of our brothers, and it has all the things an inn usually has. Tap room, stables, sleeping rooms upstairs, and the like. It's also got a cellar, and there's a passageway running from that one to the cellar of my main warehouse. At low tide, you can board a ship directly from that cellar without being seen by anyone on shore.
Would that fool the Demorc, Zephrenia? Sparhawk asked her. She glared at him for a moment, then relented. She touched the fingertips of one hand lightly to her temple. Sparhawk noted that there was more silver there now.
I think it would, she replied. We don't even know that the Demorc is here. Martell could actually have been telling us the truth.
I wouldn't count on it, Curic grunted.
Even so, she continued, the Demorc probably couldn't begin to grasp the concept of a cellar, much less underground passageways.
What's a Demorc? Vorin asked.
Sparhawk told him, and described what had happened to Captain Mabon's ship in the Arcian Straits just out from Medel. Vorin rose and began to pace up and down.
That's not the sort of thing our escape route was designed to cope with, he admitted. I think I'd better take some additional precautions. I've got 6 ships in port just now. Why don't I just send them all out at the same time? If you sail out in the middle of a flotilla, it might add a bit more confusion.
Isn't that a bit elaborate? Sparhawk asked him.
Sparhawk, I know how modest you are, but you're probably the most important man in the world just now. At least you are until you get to Samura and make your report to Vanyan. I'm not going to take any chances with you if I can help it.
He went to the garden wall and squinted at the setting sun.
We're going to have to hurry, he told them. Low tide this evening comes just after dusk, and I'll want you in the cellar when the ship's rail drops below the edge of the wharf. I'll go with you to make sure you get on board safely.
They all rowed out together towards the waterfront. Their route took them through the familiar quarter where Sparhawk had maintained his shop during the years he had been hidden there. The buildings on either side of the street were almost like old friends, and he thought he recognized a few of the people hurrying home through the narrow streets as the sun sank toward the western horizon.
Brute!
The voice from behind them probably carried halfway across the Arcian Straits, and it was painfully familiar.
Assassin!
Oh, no, Sparhawk groaned, reining Farron in. And we were so close.
He looked longingly at the waterfront inn to which Vorin was leading them, and which was but one street away.
Monster!
The voice went on in a strident tone.
Sparhawk? Curic said mildly. Is it my imagination, or is that lady trying to get your attention?
Just let it lie, Curic.
Anything you say, my lord.
Assassin, brute, monster, deserter.
There was a brief pause.
Murderer,
the woman added. I never did that, Sparhawk murmured. He sighed and turned Farron around. Hello, Lilius, he said to the robed and veiled woman who had been shouting at him. He spoke in as mild and inoffensive a tone as he could manage.
Hello, Lilius?
She shrieked.
Hello, Lilius? Is that all you have to say for yourself, brigand?
Sparhawk tried very hard not to smile. In a peculiar way, he loved Lilius, and he was pleased to see her enjoying herself so much. You're looking well, Lilius, he said conversationally, knowing that a comment like that would spur her to new heights.
Well? Well? When you have murdered me? When you have cut my heart out? When you have sunk me in the mire of deepest despair?
She leaned back in a tragic posture, head up and arms thrown wide.
Hardly a morsel of food has passed my lips since that hateful day when you abandoned me penniless in the gutter.
I left you the shop, Lilius, he protested. It fed us both before I left. Surely it still feeds you.
Shop? What do I care about the shop? It is my heart that you have broken, Makra.
She thrust back her hood and ripped off her veil.
Assassin, she cried, look at your handiwork.
She began to tear at her long, glossy black hair and to gouge at her dark, full-lipped face with her fingernails.
Lilius!
Sparhawk barked in the tone he had only had to use a few times during their years together.
Stop that! You'll hurt yourself!
But Lilius was in full voice now, and there was no stopping her.
Hurt? She cried tragically. What do I care about hurt? How can you hurt a dead woman? You want to see hurt, Makra? Look at my heart!
She ripped open the front of her robe. It was not her heart, however, that she revealed.
Oh, my goodness, Kirik said in an awed voice, staring at the woman's suddenly revealed attributes.
Vorin turned his head aside, concealing a smile. Zephrenia, however, looked at Sparhawk with a slightly different expression.
Oh, God,
Sparhawk groaned. He swung down from his saddle.
Lilius! He muttered sharply to her. Cover yourself. Think of the neighbors and all the children watching.
What do I care about the neighbors? Let them look.
She thrust out her full breasts.
What does shame mean to a woman whose heart is dead?
Grimly, Sparhawk advanced on her. When he got close enough, he spoke quietly to her from between clenched teeth.
They're very nice, Lilius, he said, but I don't really think they're much of a surprise to any man within 6 streets in any direction. Do you really want to go on with this?
She suddenly looked a little less certain, but she did not close the front of her robe.
Have it your way, he shrugged.
Then he too raised his voice.
Your heart is not dead, Lilius,
he declared to the audience breathlessly clustered on their balconies.
Far from it, I think. What of Georges, the baker, and Nendin, the sausage maker?
He was selecting names at random. Her face blanched, and she shrank back, covering her generous bosom with her robe.
You know?
She faltered. That hurt him just a little, but he covered it.
Of course, he declared, still playing to the balconies. But I forgive you. You are much woman, Lilius, and not meant to be alone.
He reached out and gently covered her hair with her hood again.
Have you been well? He asked her very softly.
I get by,
she whispered.
Good. Are we almost done?
I think we need something to round it out, don't you?
Her face looked hopeful. He tried very hard to keep from laughing.
This is serious, Makra, she hissed. My position in the community depends on it.
Trust me, he murmured.
You have betrayed me, Lilius, he said to the balconies, but I forgive you, for I have not been here to keep you from straying.
She considered that for a moment, then sobbed, fell into his arms, and buried her face in his chest.
It's just that I missed you so much, my Makra. I weakened. I am but a poor, ignorant woman, a slave to my passions. Can you ever truly forgive me?
What is there to forgive, my Lilius? He said grandly. You are like the earth, like the sea. To give is a part of your nature.
She thrust herself back from him.
Beat me, she demanded. I deserve to be beaten.
Huge tears, genuine for all he knew, stood in her glowing black eyes.
Oh, no, he refused, knowing exactly where that would lead. No beatings, Lilius, he said. Only this.
And he gave her a single, chaste kiss, full on the lips.
Be well, Lilius, he murmured softly.
Then he stepped back quickly before she could wrap her arms about his neck. He knew just how strong her arms were.
And now, though it rends my soul, I must leave you again, he declaimed.
He reached out and drew her veil once again across her face.
Think of me from time to time whilst I seek out the fate that destiny has in store for me.
He did manage to resist the impulse to lay his hand on his heart.
I knew it,
she cried, more to the onlookers than to him.
I knew that you were a man of affairs. I shall carry our love in my heart for all eternity, my Makra. And I shall remain faithful to you to the grave, and if you live, come back to me.
She had both arms spread wide again.
And if you do not, Send your ghost to me in my dreams, and I will comfort your pale shade as best I can."
He backed away from her outstretched arms. Then he spun so that his robe would swirl dramatically, he owed her that much, and vaulted into Farron's saddle.